The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to top people and ideas, presented by U Mobile.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin, and on the Breakfast Grill with me this morning is Her Excellency Laura Raquel Donoso Gonzalez, Ambassador of Ecuador to Malaysia. Thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much for having me here. Good morning to you and to all the people who are listening to this program.
I want to begin with some of the political headlines that have come out of Ecuador in recent times, and this has to do with the recent election of a new president in April this year, Lenin Moreno. He served previously as a vice president under the previous administration of Rafael Correa, who was elected in 2006 and remained in office until 2017. By many accounts, Correa, who's seen as popular and charismatic, led a decade-long administration, represented the most stable political period of Ecuador's democratic history. Now, commentators are saying the new president, Moreno, is undoing his good work, or at least working against some of the established practices and policies of the Correa administration. Just to give some numbers to our listeners, under Correa, poverty fell by 38% and extreme poverty by 47%. Social spending as a share of GDP also doubled, as did public investments.
Under the leadership of Rafael Correa, Ecuador started with what we call a revolución ciudadana, that is like a social revolution, where basically the human being is the main, is the most important objective of the development and society. Also, the basis of the vision is going back to our real origins, which are the philosophy, for instance, of the summa causae, which is basically harmony. Our ancestors have this philosophy, the harmony with the country, with the authorities, with our community, and with nature. These are the basic. This is the basic principle of the indigenous people of my country that had to come to the top stage as a general vision. And of course, this general vision brought a new constitution. In this constitution, we have incredible things like, for the first time, probably in the world, we've given rights to nature.
When did this new constitution come into being? When was it established?
It was established in 2008 under the leadership of Correa. There was a general assembly and people could comment and participate in the elaboration of this new constitution. And right now, we have a moment to revise the constitution because the current president, Lenin Moreno, has invited the population to present observations after this time, this period, to present all the comments and all the things that that could be revised. The president received like 7,000 comments and observations, and we're down to 7 questions that he's going to pose through a public consultation. So people, we're going to be able to vote and agree or not agree with the changes.
Now, the question of how Ecuadorian politics is being framed, especially by the mass media, it's suggested that the current president, under the influence of the Ecuadorian Business Committee, has slashed social welfare spending and cut civil servant salaries, despite the fact that Ecuador ranks among Latin America's nations with the lowest public debt. Also, I think the Inter-American Development Bank rated the efficiency of the Ecuadorian public services. Once it was something close to the last of 16 countries, it now is considered the sixth best in the region. And yet the current president has sought to cut the salaries of public servants. Why is this going on?
Well, just to put things into the right context, under the regime of Rafael Correa, we experienced a boom of income with oil. The prices of oil were very high. And, of course, the social vision of the Constitution that I was mentioning before was the top priority, and big investments, as you had mentioned, were done. And this is going to continue. The current president, when he stepped into office, he said that, of course, not just they're going to continue. So he has new programs, housing programs. He has very interesting things. He's very interested on promoting women gender equality. Of course, all the people with disabilities or with special needs are top in the social agenda, so that is continuing. And in regarding the public servants, more than anything is reshuffling. It's making it more efficient so all the public institutions can have the number of personnel that they really need. Because with the drop of the prices of oil, the country does not have enough money to cover inefficiently all the necessities. And my country is dollarized. That's something that has to be highlighted. That means that we don't have this this capacity like other countries to just go ahead and print bills. We depend on our own economy. We depend on our exports, and we want to attract foreign investment. So that is the reality, but that does not mean going back on a program that has been first working and working well.
Now, just to come back to the theme of this conflict, it seems, at least from news reports, a public fallout between the former president and the current one. At least on Twitter, they apparently criticize each other. And the current president, Moreno's own vice president, publicly protested what he considers President Moreno's rapprochement with conservative forces. He was subsequently stripped of his power, arrested, and put under preventive detention, and I understand under investigation for corruption. This volatility in Ecuadorian politics, is it having an impact on society, on the running of businesses and such?
Not at all. Actually, everything is running like usual. All the institutions, everybody is doing the services that they're supposed to. That does not affect. To the contrary, I think that the perception, the level of acceptance of the President Moreno is very high, because the population is happy to see that first there is an independence of the different powers, that cases of corruption have to be pursued by the judges. Regardless of the hierarchy of the person, which is very necessary and important, not just the message, but an action. So, yes, this is the case. And President Moreno started his mandate in May 24th with an acceptance of about 64%, because it was, you know, was narrow, but he won. Social revolution of Ecuador continue on. The citizens' revolution continue on. He won by a small margin, but it did. But since then, all the polls are ratifying that his level of acceptance is just growing higher and higher. And one of the main things is because of his attitude and his disposition to combat corruption. This is the main thing. And also, he has what he said is, "I offer my hand." After this this confrontation, typical of any election pre-election period, now I open my hand to everybody. I'm not the president just for the people who voted for me. I'm the president for all the Ecuadorians. So this openness and this this desire to dialogue with all the sectors is very, very positive and is very well perceived. And right now, some polls say that his acceptance is up to 84%.
I understand. But coming back to the question of the price of crude, this is seems to be a story that's replicated in many parts of the world. Social policies are predicated on a certain price of oil, and the fall of the price of crude, of course, has had a detrimental effect on that. I wonder if you could just, you know, as somebody from that part of the world, to give us a sense of the context in which many left-of-center parties a decade ago or so swept to power across Latin America with very strong social policies. I think it's sometimes called a pink tide to describe everything from Hugo Chavez to President Correa's win. Is that tide essentially turning back? Now, we see a crisis in Venezuela, but what about the rest of the region?
Well, for countries like Ecuador, this agenda stays as a priority. With other countries, we have differences and we have agreements like any other country in the world. We share a lot of visions with some of them. But of course, nothing 100% because every country is so different. Our economy is based on the price of oil. Unfortunately, we have a big percentage of our GDP depends on that. But that means that we have to be very efficient and very careful in how we use our resources.
To what extent has the government of Ecuador embraced the idea of diversification in the economy?
In Ecuador, first we're changing the metrics production system. We're moving forward to alternative sources of energy, renewable, because again, we're trying, at least trying to use the latest technologies in order to not to damage too much our environment. We're trying to export more, not just raw products, which has been the typical case, but more with added value. And we have so many things to offer because my country is very biodiverse. We have high mountains of the Andes where the climate is rather cold. It's like about, 20, 22 degrees in average. We have Amazon jungle, which is the typical tropical area, something like Sarawak. I was recently there and reminded me of the Amazon jungle. We have the coast with pristine beaches in front of the Pacific Ocean. And then, of course, we have the Galapagos Islands, which are the best-known thing about Ecuador because Charles Darwin developed his evolution theory after visiting and studying there. So all these geographical, marvelous places that offer so much to the tourists also offer lots of diverse production possibilities. So right now we're producing so much fish, seafood, we have flowers, we have superfoods like quinoa, which is grown just in the high mountains of the Andes by Ecuador, Peru, and Bolivia. So we have very interesting things. To Malaysia, we have been exporting lots of cocoa and chocolate, which is fantastic because people are starting to look for it.
I'm speaking to Her Excellency Laura Raquel Donoso Gonzalez, Ambassador of Ecuador to Malaysia. Next up, we speak about Ecuador in the context of Latin America and opportunities for Malaysian businesses there. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Good morning. If you just joined us, I'm Sherrod Kutin, and our guest this morning on the Breakfast Grill is Her Excellency Laura Raquel Donoso Gonzalez, Ambassador of Ecuador to Malaysia. We ended the last segment with you telling us about the wonderful chocolate that comes from Ecuador. Currently, which of the countries that are Ecuador's main trading partners? Are they the countries of Latin America themselves or further afield?
For Ecuador, one of the main countries, the destiny of the export is the U.S., and we export also a lot of products to Europe.
And so what impetus is there for Ecuadorian businesses, you know, to turn, as it were, pivot towards Asia and look to this region to sell their products or to import goods that they might find, a market for in Ecuador?
I think that business people are looking more and more to Asia because this is the Southeast Asia, particularly, is a growing area in the world. If you see a lot of countries in the rest of the world, they're not growing at the rate that the countries here are. So that is very important. We have to diversify our economy. We cannot just continue with our traditional markets. So I think that Malaysia offers a very interesting logistical position. This could be a hub for entering products and being redistributed to the rest of Asia. We see all the advancements you're doing in terms of ports and interconnectivity. So all these things are getting Malaysia into place to become this hub. So we want to be ready.
I have some numbers, and I'm not quite sure how accurate they are. They're from a couple of years ago that suggest the total trade between our two countries is something of the region of $142 million U.S. dollars, with basically the balance of trade in the favor of Malaysia at this point. Is that the picture that you have? That
well, I have some statistics from the Ecuadorian authorities of 2016. That mentioned that the export of Ecuadorian products is $70 million, and the imports are $18 million. So basically, we have lots of opportunities.
Oh, 80 million. So in that case, the balance of trade is actually in
favor of Ecuador. Uh-huh. But there are top differences because we're exporting basically food, and Malaysia is exporting rubber gloves and technological things like LED screens and parts for machines, things like that.
I understand there's an agreement between your country and the Port of Klang Authority and the Port of Authority of Manta that is seeking to connect ASEAN countries to South American markets through Ecuador.
Manta is a very interesting port because it's at the tip of the, let's say, the closest part to Asia, because South America goes into that direction. So that port faces Asia, and it's being developed right now as a magnificent port. And we have many tourist big boats arriving there already, and it's a port of entrance of many of much commerce. And furthermore, we are developing a multimodal connectivity way through the whole South America. That is, starting from the port of Manta, going through the highlands, going into the Amazon jungle, and going to the Amazon River, and in Brazil, going all the way through Manaus to the Atlantic coast. So this will be a very interesting and very important way of mobilization for goods and services through the middle of South America.
But this hasn't happened as yet. I mean, is the line all fully developed at this point?
It's not fully developed, but it's already working in some segments. So it's moving forward.
I understand also that your government is interested in investments in the palm oil sector, and I think Sime Darby has been mentioned in this regard.
Actually, Ecuador has already palm oil, and we're exporting palm oil. So it's not one of our top products, but we have it, and we see much potential on this area, and we share the concerns and the things that Malaysia is going through producing and exporting.
Now, also in the news, interest in the education sector, Ecuador has spoken to the National University of Malaysia, or University Kebangsaan Malaysia, to participate in a educational project in a new city.
Oh, yes. In Ecuador, we have is among the top things and in the list of things that Ecuador has in the social agenda to develop and invest in education. So the Secretary of Higher Education of Ecuador, which is called CENESID, signed an agreement with the Kebangsaan University in order to develop areas of new technologies. That will be with biomass, with waves, with water, in order to find alternative ways to oil, to petroleum. And on that, we're trying to link this to development centers in Ecuador. We have one entity called Yachay. Yachay was a design university, but also an area of developing. It's like a hub for technology and innovation. So we're trying to link that. So high technology will be shared and exchanged between Ecuador and Malaysia.
And how far into this relationship have we come?
Well, right now we have already an MOU signed. So this is the first step. And we have the political decision of moving forward. And, of course, we're confronting financial issues, all kinds of details that have to be adjusted in on the way. But the political decision is there. And I think the objectives are so, so good that we're going to be seeing results fairly soon.
And maybe you could speak to what I understand is the fact that Malaysia has funded a monorail project in one of your cities,
Ruminyawi.
And the potential for Malaysian business to get into the infrastructure sector.
Yes, some years ago, Malaysia showed interest in investing in this monorail. since you have so much expertise in that area, there has been ongoing studies on this issue.
But no investment as such at the moment?
From what I know, not investment as such. But we have lots of opportunities, especially in highways, because Ecuador invested a lot of money in producing and creating very good highways. So, of course, they need permanent maintenance and they need tolls. From what I have been seeing here in Malaysia after my 1.5 years here, is that you have very good expertise in this area. So it will be interesting for companies from Malaysia to look into that, basically tolls and maintenance of highways. We have also built airports. We're building ports. And some other countries are interested already. They're investing in Ecuador. And we have to keep up those levels of investments. And hopefully Malaysians will find the opportunity to visit my country and experience firsthand all the potentials and all the beauties of the country.
Well, one last question. What are the main challenges for Malaysian businesses going into Ecuador? What would you think they have to be prepared for?
Well, I think that the main thing is just going there. I think it's necessary more exchange of information, know more about the country. Sometimes, unfortunately, it happens in Malaysia, they ask me, oh, you're from Ecuador, and they look like, and where is that? And I have to specify, it's South America. And something like that happens, unfortunately, in Ecuador as well. Not much known about Malaysia there either. So basically, I think first is tourism. I think that will be good. Education, so people can know more about the other side. And some people ask me, is language going to be a barrier? I don't think so, because there's an international language, which is English, and business people can communicate fairly well in that language. I wouldn't say is that. And basically, in this area of fast communications, distances should not be an obstacle anymore.
Thank you very much for joining us this morning.
No, thanks to you, and thank you for having me here.
I've been speaking to Her Excellency Laura Raquel Donoso Gonzalez, Ambassador of Ecuador to Malaysia. I'm Sharad Kutin, and you're listening to The Breakfast Grill on BFM 89.9, the business station.
That episode of BFM Breakfast Grill was brought to you by U-Mobile, where data hearts you.